Good morning, everybody. Let's go ahead and get started. The police department final board meeting for April 15, 2026. Start off with a roll call. Trustee Kwan.
Here.
Trustee Santos. Trustee Spinnin.
Here.
Trustee Conapati.
Here.
Trustee Woosley.
Here.
Trustee Lee.
Present.
Trustee Flicker.
Here.
Trustee Otto.
Here.
And myself, Garvin here, is present. There are no orders of the day, no sunshine to wave. Any public comments at this time? All right, no public comment. Go ahead and go to the consent calendar. Is there anything on the consent calendar that you would like to be pulled or just discussed?
Motion to approve.
All right, if not, we got a motion by Santos.
Second.
Second by Woosley. Further discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? All right. Takes us to investments for our new CIO, Dave Vaughn.
Good morning.
Morning.
We have a very light agenda on the investment side today.
Then get your briefing.
Yeah, I'm on standby.
So Dave works on that. We do have new mics. This is the first time we're using them. If you see the red light on, then it's working. Just hit the speak button and the red light will come on. You can either turn it off or you can hit mute if you're not speaking.
Yeah, I think the light stays red even if you're on mute.
Right. Yes. So the red light means powered, not that it's muted. And then the display will say you're speaking or if you're muted or standby. If you have any questions, just flag me down and we'll get somebody over here to help you out.
Okay. So again, good morning. The investment agenda is light to the point of non-existent today. So all I have are some preliminary comments. I'm going to apologize in advance here for not having a return estimate for you. We're working on getting that from Nikita, and I'm thinking mid-meeting I'll probably have something for you so I can give you an update there. But don't be misled by the lack of agenda items on the board agenda into thinking that we're not, you know, working or that we're just going to kind of ease into things. We have a pretty full IC agenda coming up for the meeting in a couple weeks. And so in a couple weeks, we'll be dealing with the public equity review, the private markets pacing plan, and then we'll take a look at how the updated capital market assumptions have affected the risk and return estimates for strategic asset allocation. So three pretty pithy items to deal with in a couple of weeks. And look forward to some reading for the IC members. And I have a return estimate for you now. So these will be through the end of the day on April 14th. These are provided by Makita. So fiscal year to date for the pension, that's 9.29%. And for the healthcare trust, it's 13.84%. And just to caveat these, I know we have a little bit of a caveat every time, but these are estimates. So it's only to be based in large part on index returns. So I would not, please don't hold me to the second decimal point on the return numbers. That's it for all of it.
Thank you. Any questions for Greg? Well, thank you very much. No old business, so we'll go ahead and go to new business for a oral update by CEO John Flynn.
Great. Good morning, everybody. Beginning this week with the start of our new CIO, we ended a long recruitment process. So from a staffing update perspective, that was probably one of the heavier lifts for the organization. So that's we're happy to have that solidified. At the last meeting, I reported that we were fully staffed again for the first time in a number of months. And I guess I should stop reporting when we're fully staffed because with the retirement of our investment systems analyst, which we knew was coming this month, and an unknown promotion from one of our analysts to a program manager in PD, and now with the senior IO opening, ORS has three permanent vacancies and one overstrength vacancy with our benefits program. So we received hiring freeze exemptions for three of those positions. We're going to start working on the other one shortly. So things are moving along. I'll give you a more detailed update at our next meeting. On the approval for our communications consultant contracts, we processed amendments for the lawyer contract. Our social media vendor, however, we're working with OER on the AB332 process for union comments. We met this week with IFPTE, and we have a planned meeting scheduled for next week with MEF. This is the process by which the OER we're required to work with OER to allow the unions to have, I think it's a 45-day comment window on any new contracts, amended contracts, or RFPs, which in this case, this would be an amended contract. An update from a compliance related to procurements, with bringing on our Amanda, our admin program manager, we've centralized some of our contracts and procuring within the organization. And one of the things that we've added for a compliance check is our certificates of insurance. May not seem like much, but it's something now that we're working through all our contracts, working with the vendors to get updated certificates, and then working with risk to make sure that we have the most current thing on file. Again, really, we do that usually at the start of every contract, but now we're going to be doing it on a basis by which the certificates are expiring. On a strategic planning front, so as you know, at your last meeting, you approved the strategic, the mission, the vision, the core values, strategic goals, and objectives. And staff has been working to frame out the structure and the development of an action plan. We conducted a staff survey on what the core values mean to you, and received some very insightful commentary from our staff, which, you know, gave me some good insight that the majority of the responses were already where I would have expected them to be in terms of framing out the core values. And so using that as input, we're going to develop a narrative around each of the core values presented at our quarterly all staff meeting at the end of this month. We are also working on framing out the action plans that we're hoping to present in part or in whole in May. On the agenda today, from a governance standpoint, we have a few policies that we're looking for approval and a delegation for your consideration. All of these were discussed at the March Joint Governance meeting, and we'll discuss in more detail later in today's agenda. We'll also be reviewing the governance review framework that Amanda has put together. Looking for approval on a work plan for that review framework. Also to note, as part of our governance work, as part of our ADA WCAG compliance work, we're also getting ready to launch a new section of the website related to our governance documents. So if you've been onto the website and you've gone to the governance document area, you may have noticed you actually get taken to a whole separate site. That site is not WCAG compliant. And so we're bringing that internal to the structure of our current website that will be WCAG compliant, and the target for release is next week. On the internal audit front, Baker Tilly is compiling the risk assessment, developing the proposed internal audit plans. The goal is to present these at the May Joint Audit Committee meetings with a presentation to the boards, hopefully in June. Staff continues to work on remediating the remaining internal audit findings. Two of the 10 remaining outstanding findings had remediation submitted to Baker Tilly for confirmation. We'll be working with Baker Tilly to assist them in the confirmation of those remediations, also to be presented at next month's audit meeting. Last month, the city auditor presented the city audit status report as of 12/31, and as expected, I'm happy to report that ORS currently has no outstanding city audit findings. We are currently participating in an ongoing audit, a citywide audit around succession planning, but I just wanted to report that good news, and we'll have the audit report on as an attachment in the consent agenda on a future agenda. WCAG, ADA compliance, WCAG, so the web content accessibility guidelines that we're on April 24th is our deadline to come in compliance with. I'm not sure I've given this enough highlights based on the amount of work it has taken staff to do to come into compliance. So all of our websites, so we maintain two websites internally. They've all been remediated and are compliant. Their structures are compliant. We have made progress with our vendors that host our board agenda materials and media to try to make them compliant. Also partnering with the city, because the city also uses the same software platform. We've been working to remediate all of the documents that make up the largest set of content on the website. So it's not just the website structure, but every document that we post on the website, if it is a current document, needs to be remediated. So we've remediated just under 100 documents internally. And, today we're going to go through a budget presentation, and I lived through what it costs to remediate this one document. To do 100 documents is impressive. This included investment reports, policies, 61 administrative policies that the team did internally, including charters. And then lastly, we through the city, we were able to partner with a consultant for our more complex documents. We had to send out over 100 documents for remediation for our ACFRs, our evaluation reports, some of our complex process policy documents, and most of our member forms. And so I think the last set of documents came back on Friday. So now we're gonna work to get those, confirm that they've been remediated fully, and then B, get them posted on our website so that we can pull down all the content that is no longer, that will no longer be compliant. Again, to our best effort to making our site compliant within the deadline. The team really stepped up to do all of this extra work and very quickly pivoted when we realized some of the challenges. Leaned on our IT team for support to learn and help us understand the accessibility tools that were available to us to get this done. And then lastly, not to forget that we don't, on the agenda today, we have some content that gets produced by people outside of the organization, right? Our consultants are that produce content for us, whether it's an investment report or a memo from Aon or a presentation from our actuary. They all now need to be compliant as well. So they are going along the same journey that we are. And so bringing them along has also put a burden on the admin staff. So because now they become the traffic cop, so to say, for all of the ADA compliant materials. And so we've had to take a realistic look at our timeline and deadlines for posting to make sure that we have enough time to do a check, because technically we can't post a document if it's not compliant. And so, working with our vendors and our consultants and our supporters to help them along this journey has been interesting. I wouldn't have expected that we were on the bleeding edge. But, we were definitely having conversations with some of our consultants that they didn't seem to be aware that this was coming down, even though all of their public organizations that they support will have this requirement. To wrap up, we have our quarterly retirement planning workshop scheduled for Thursday, May 28th for all of our retirees that are approaching retirement. I know this is on the federated side, but I think it's important. I attended the SJREA April meeting last week, where the topic was cybersecurity. I gave the community an update on all the great work that ORS has done from a security perspective, specifically focusing on some of the remediations that we've done. And then also making sure that I covered the topic related to the city data breach. The city actually had sent a representative to take all the hard questions, I would say. So that was very good. Our new CIO is scheduled to present there next June, this coming June. Earlier this week, I sent a survey to each of you for educational topic interest to help put some planning in place. We wanted to gauge your interest on these different topics. While they're all important, we can't do everything at once, and we want to make sure that we don't overwhelm the business that we need to do with just education. So we'll try to space those out based on what we what we hear back from you and the Federated Board. April newsletters are distributed this week. If they haven't gone out yet, they would, I think they'll go out, some will go out the end of the day today. And then just a reminder that we are closed on Monday, May 25th for Memorial Day. So sorry for the link there, but if you have any questions, let me know.
Thank you. Any questions for CEO?
Is the ADA compliance thing a California or federal?
Federal. Which is, you know, why when we're dealing with some of our vendors, it's a little, you know, it's not just their California clients, but it would be their national clients. Some of them are definitely further along than others. There is a dual deadline. So based on the size of your constituency, which we have been deemed to be part of the city of San Jose, which has a million residents. And so, but if it's, I think it's less than 50,000 constituents, the deadline is actually a year away. But I would think that the majority would be applied to this deadline coming next week.
And the other question I had was, are you planning the education sort of as part of the board agenda?
The idea would be to do consumable items that would be within a board meeting. So, you know, not every board meeting is heavy, and on those meetings we maybe look to do, depending on the topic, you know, something short or maybe a little bit longer in content.
You mentioned the presentation you did on startup security. So can you remind me again, what is the responsibility of the city with intrusions and things like that? And then what is our responsibility? How much of risk is there for us if we're dependent upon the city?
Sure. I think that's an interesting question that probably deserves its own presentation at some point. But we rely on the city for all of our networks, all of our internet access, our email systems, trying to think if there's anything else. And part of the MOU that was signed in 2024 says that we will take all, we will work with the city's cybersecurity office to support our cybersecurity initiatives. You know, we are completely reliant on the city in those regards. What the city doesn't have access over is our pension gold. Part of the audits that were done, I think the audit was done before I joined ORS, but the remediations were happening while I joined. We did a full audit and remediation set with LRS and pension gold. And now we do an annual penetration test for our systems, which include pension gold.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
Sure.
Okay, if there's no other question, then we'll go to 4B, oral update by Council Member Casey.
Just a quick update. We had the item I had mentioned in the past, housing for police officers. City of San Jose has taken an equity position in one of the developments downtown that was on the brink of going into foreclosure. And I saw that as an opportunity to kind of squeeze out a few units. So we have 50 units where police officers will get preference over the other folks. It's open to all public employees, but the goal is either for cadets and first and second year police officers have an opportunity, first preference, to get into those units. It passed 6-5. We had 5 council members that were opposed to it, but we barely got it across the line. So happy to report that. Other than that, we're still going to crunch in terms of the budget and still working through that process and hope to have updates next time.
Thank you. Any questions? Thank you. Okay. Thanks. We can go to 4C, discussion action on proposed administrative budget.
Let me just share my screen here. So Good morning again. Today we're going to be going through the proposed administrative expense budget, looking for the board's adoption. After the meeting, I'll ask for any feedback that you might have on the new presentation format. So just as a reminder, you know, this is a process that evolves over many months, you know, working internally, then working through the city's the city's process starts in early in the calendar year. We'll get to submit our personnel budgets, and then again in February we have to submit some of our the remainder of our budgets. The mayor's, this all goes in from all of the departments to help form the city's the mayor's March message, and then we continue to work through the process to both you know, educate the public and develop the final set of budgets that get presented in front of city council. Your role is that, you know, we develop our board-based budgets or plan-based budgets, right? So there's a police and fire budget versus the federated budget. And today we're going to go through the police and fire. City council hopes to adopt that budget in June. You know, so I think it's important to remember that we had a number of sources of funds and a number of uses of funds, and you know, based on some previous audit recommendations, we present all of those in the budget documents. But you know, as a reminder, we've got investment income, we've got participant contributions and city contributions. You know, on the output side, we pay our pension benefits, we pay for our health benefits, and then of course we have the cost of running ORS as an organization. You know, I think it's worth noting that some of our investment, professional services, consultants, and manager fees, and some of our capital costs around the pension administration software are not included in the administrative budget that are being presented in front of you today. So you can see the trend here for our sources and uses. The plan is large and growing, and benefits are increasing steadily, which is expected as the population ages, and so do the salaries associated with the newly pensioned members. Investment income has been the dominant source of funds for the organization, but it's also the most varied. Our fiscal year 26 budget investment income reflects the assumed return. That is not a market forecast. On the next page, we show the administrative budget with a 7-year trend. So, you know, this is, I think this gives you a very good view of how the organization has been paid for and run over the past few years. These are budget numbers. So the 5-year average for our year-over-year budget increase has been 8.8%. And what you're going to see here in a few slides is that we're going to be requesting a 3.3% increase, you know, with the rising personnel costs and potential medical services being the big drivers. So, you know, the bottom line for police and fire is that we're asking for an $8.799 million budget, which is a 3.31% increase or $282,000 over the adopted 2026 budget. Some of the highlights are on the personnel side. Should be no surprise to you that we're requesting the creation of a new benefits program manager position. We came to the board mid-cycle and asked for an overstrength position to address some needs. And at that time, we told you that as part of that, we'd be requesting this position. Also, on the investment side, we're doing not a new position, but an add delete. We're looking to add the deputy CIO, which has also been approved as an overstrength position, and the deletion of a senior IO. So net, no increase in number of staff, but a small impact on the budget. We've also adjusted our professional services to align with the new major contracts. You may remember last year we were in major contract at the time of presentation. We were in contract negotiations with most of our primary service providers. Now we actually have new contracts in place and at least the almost a year under our belt under the new contracts. So we have some been able to sharpen the pencils in that area of the budget. And then just some continued support for our overstrength administrative staff specialists who support us at these meetings every day. And then all of your travel arrangements behind the scene. And then our cybersecurity testing and support programs. You know, the other thing I think is important, we've shifted from planning for this budget presentation to preparing for the strategic planning components that I hope to present in May. It's important to know that this budget does not include or estimate anything for any new initiatives that would be a derivative of the strategic planning process. So, you know, that will have to be addressed separately because it's not developed enough to be able to be included in the cycle, which really started back in February. On the personal services, I kind of already hit the highlights here. This is the largest area of increase from a percentage standpoint. You know, our deputy chief investment officer, in combination with the elimination of a senior investment officer, the addition of our program manager converted to a permanent position. And then, you know, I think it's also worth noting that in the past, we were able to not need to budget for some other personnel-related items, vacation sellback, MPPs, or rehired retirees, and you know we've had an intern or two in the past. But as we become fully staffed, we have less contingency that builds up in the budget. So if we want to invest in these programs, well, some of them we have no choice, right? So as an example, vacation sellback, you know, we have no choice. That's a benefit that's already been earned. But our rehired retirees and our intern, you know, that's the area where we want to be able to invest. We need to budget for those now. And I've already mentioned the continued support. Okay. Non-personnel, you know, last year we built out the fifth floor, which, you know, we had a significant budget line item for that. So we're getting some savings in there, which has kind of been offset a little bit by some of the planned sixth floor refurbishments that we're planning. But net, it looks like a savings, but it was really a one-time cost last year. We're also planning to remit our payroll remittance to do that electronically, which will save us, we're conservatively estimating $13,000 savings. We'll, of course, let all of our members opt out if they prefer to receive paper, but, you know, so these are just estimates until we actually have some real numbers for next year's budget cycle. We put in front of the boards our new Act for Software contract. I don't know if it was last month or the month before that. You know, that had somewhat of a significant increase. You know, although we have new mics in the boardroom today, these are still a temporary solution, and we're still working with the city to develop a better, longer-term solution for this boardroom's AV upgrades. And then, of course, we want to budget for our penetration testing that we're going to start to do on an annual basis. We had a bank transition that is in progress right now, but will continue through the budget cycle. And then lastly, we're looking to bring in an AI-enabled web search for our site. It's kind of a bolt-on on top of our existing site that will help our members find the information they need with less clicks. And then we have a couple other, we have a slight increase in rent based on the new lease. And then based on our current run rate, we're suggesting adding another $10,000 to the educational travel. All right, professional services. This is a reduction for the first time in a number of years. You know, I think this is largely result of, again, some of our sharpening of our pencils. We had some unknown going into the budget process last year. We needed to have a little bit more contingency. So, you know, we're looking at our legal services and, you know, basing on three-year average, we felt comfortable that we could reduce that a little bit. Reduction in our temporary staffing now that we're approaching full vacancy. And then our cybersecurity remediation project had concluded. So, you know, we're no longer need of those services. And then we also had a death audit vendor contract that resulted in some savings. And then, of course, this year we're not doing our actuarial experience study. So although it's a savings, it's more that we're not doing, you know, we don't do those every year. We're adding some additional resources to our internal audit contract so that we can support the start of internal audits into the next fiscal year. And we have put a bookmark for an executive search firm to plan support senior management recruitment. If that doesn't make that statement doesn't make you nervous, it should. We know Sandra is planning her retirement in this calendar year, so she's our benefits division manager, and so we just want to be prepared to be able to do a full recruitment for that very difficult position to fill, and so we're just putting that cost out there, whether it's we believe it'll be this year, so I never say never. I'm trying to talk her out of it, but can only do that for so long.
Hey John,
yes.
Question, just to go back on the budget. Is there a special call out for cybersecurity in the budget, or was that just only folded into the IT overall budget?
So it is folded into the so the only special professional services that I would think is related to this cyber is the penetration testing. That's the only piece right now. It is an area that I plan on focusing on. As part of our strategic plan, as an area that we probably can and should do more.
Yeah, no, I would agree. That's going to require some focus.
Yeah.
Thanks.
So here are some more details and breakdowns of our professional services. I feel like this is an area that we spend a lot of time on, so I wanted to retain some of the details in this presentation. I'm not going to go through these, but if you have some questions, I can always refer back to it. Medical services. So, you know, we have a little bit of an internal discussion. Why is medical services separate from professional services? Because they're technically a professional service. And I think there was a transition that happened a number of years ago, and the boards at the time wanted to understand how this cost structure was changing year over year. Potentially next year, we're going to roll this into the professional services and not keep it as a separate line item anymore, because it can be a little bit confusing. But you're seeing an increase, a significant year-over-year increase, and this is for, I think the primary reason is really we have one new IME provider that is a little bit more expensive than the old provider, as well as, you know, we're just noting that we had a significant increase in applications in the past few months, you know, almost twice the monthly rate. They come in peaks and spurts, and so, you know, not something necessarily to be worried about, but we want to make sure that we have the budget to support to support what we believe our staff capacity is. You know, we manage the process as best we can internally, but also relies on our members and doctors and getting reports, and so sometimes those processes can be cumbersome, as we know, but we want to this is an increase in here. We generally run under budget here because we can't put the capacity through, not necessarily because of our staff, but you know, the overstrength program manager position that we have been looking to hire will direct it. One of their direct responsibilities or part of the program that they're going to overview will be the disability program. And so not having that person in place has slowed us down a little bit for this year, which is why we'll probably run significantly under budget this year.
John, so with the 16.67% increase, that was sort of expected as we got into the end of the year and looking into this year.
That's expected, and when I met with Sandra to go through these details, it's the same expected throughput as last year. So, you know, just again, there are a lot of, you know, as the disability committee knows, there's a lot of moving parts to get a member in front of the disability committee and then ultimately in front of this board. But, you know, these are estimates by, there's a bunch of different costs that happen through the process. And so, but it's the same set of estimates that we had last year. And some of these are because of the contract.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
All right. Last year, I received a couple of questions about artificial intelligence and how we're using AI here at ORS and what our plans are, you know, because I think depending on who you're talking to, they either think it's an imperative or they're scared of it. And so I just wanted to kind of level set on where we are and what we're doing here. This is not necessarily a budget driven slide, but I do think it's important that you understand where we are in our AI journey. So, you know, a couple of things that we've done. We brought the city's digital privacy officer in to do a presentation to all staff to kind of, what I would call would be like AI 101. You know, what are the do's and don'ts? What do you have to be careful of? And you know, how people are using AI, in an office setting. For some of our senior staff, the city has been offering an advanced AI upskilling using, ChatGPT as their chosen, product. And so, you know, we've had one senior staff member go already. I think we have three people enrolled in the program currently. The space is very limited, and it requires some dedication time for our staff to go and attend. But essentially, it's trying to take them from a surface level user of ChatGPT and making them an advanced user of ChatGPT. Maybe we'll have one of them present in a future meeting about everything that they learned. And then I had also mentioned one of the budget initiatives that we had on the thing this year was to create a part of the website survey that we received last year was that the few people that participated in the survey complained about not being able to find stuff on the website. And the website is complicated because we serve two very distinct sets of members. The rules are different. The documents are different. And so, you know, we did some due diligence earlier in the year to try to identify if there was a solution. We think we have one. The city is using another one. And so we're hoping with some budget this year, we'll be able to roll out a web-enabled search for our members. It should do a couple of things based on the demo that I saw. It should allow us to see what members are searching for first, and then also for us to see what they can't find. And, you know, I think that gives us a really good insight on what it is, how we can best invest in our online presence for our members. And then what's ahead, you know, I really feel that we need to invest in literacy for the staff, you know, in enhancing our vocabulary and understanding, you know, I play with AI a lot, and, you know, some of it is just personal interest, but I still feel like I have to put a lot more energy into AI than I actually get out of AI. And so, you know, but I think some of that is learning, some of that is skill and experience, and I feel every day I get a little better, and also I feel like AI also gets better. So, you know, kind of bringing that into the workplace, making that part of our common vocabulary, you know, working with Barbara and some of the senior staff, you know, putting some goals and objectives inside of our senior staff's performance evaluations to say what are you bringing to the table from an AI perspective, I think is going to be important. You know, some of the other pension funds around the state are also bringing in some experienced prompt engineers. You know, I think, you know, putting a good prompt together, you know, garbage in, garbage out. And so I think that prompt is really what is going to be important. So kind of working to see what kind of resources do we have locally that we could bring into the organization to do that. And then also just looking through, the city has rolled out a new learning management system where they have some canned courses and they have one or two related to AI, hoping that they'll roll out a few more, but giving the staff, not just telling the staff that you need to do this, but also giving them the space and time and the ability to focus, to spend some time doing some of those trainings as a requirement, not as a if you want And then you hope, you know, kind of the third bullet here is, it's where's the payoff? And the payoff is, if I can have senior staff that is thinking about AI when they're looking at their workload and thinking about new processes, the hope is that they see where AI can add value to the existing processes, or where if we change the process, potentially we can make it better, more efficient, more accurate, whatever it might be. But with some AI component, not as the driving force, but as an additional force.
Hey, John?
Sure.
Before you go to the next section, I have two questions.
Please.
The scene that it's a different, I mean, you're looking at benchmarking. On page 4, you have the sources of funds. Is this not smoothed out? I mean, it seems very volatile, the investment returns. I thought we smoothed out.
So these are actual returns, not the smooth.
Actual.
They're not actuarial.
So, I mean, like, for example, in like 2022, what would we have done? We would have dipped into assets?
I don't know. I'll look to some of the team that was here in 22.
Like, how do we fund a deficit? Because we clearly, investment returns were negative. $350 million.
So it becomes a little bit of a cash flow issue, right? As well as the smooth return, the actuarial returns, the investment returns that we have this year get in impacted the actuarial valuations for next year, which then impact the contributions that start on you. So it's almost like a almost 2-year lag, depending on where you are in the process. And those get smoothed in over 5 years. But essentially, it causes contributions to go up dramatically, right? I think I haven't heard Jay talk on the topic yet, but I heard Prabhu say that we invest for a lifetime, right? You know, we're not investing for 10 years, we're not investing for 20 years, we're investing for a lifetime. And that is absolutely true. But every June, we take out a tape measure and say, where are we, right? And so we do take a snapshot at the end of June and say, what are our investment returns as compared to our assumed rate of return? And based on that, impacts both member and city contribution.
Yeah, I've heard of that. This is more of a cash flow question.
John, going back, you said you're going to take medical services and go together with personnel services. What's the advantage?
Just budgeting, just from a budget perspective.
That means there's more funding?
No. Again, it's just accounting. I'm not sure why, the medical services are provided by our IME, and they're a professional service. For some reason, we took this one professional service and we budgeted it as a separate category. And so it's all accounting, no change to the actual program itself or the availability of money. It's just probably belongs in one category.
John, is that might have been related to the fact that we were supposed to go to a panel of doctors?
Yeah.
To which there was a lot of discussion and debate about what the cost associated with that be. And they may be, extraordinarily more than we're already paying. Mm-hmm. My guess is that's probably why that decision was made. To be able to track it better.
That's not to say that we won't be tracking those, right? We still have all of that budget information, but from a budget planning approval perspective, I mean, essentially it's a professional service.
Yeah, no, it makes sense, and I don't ever see that changing, even though it's in the charter, because let's be clear, we could never get it through.
Right.
Oh, sorry, I also
wanted to add that the medical services personnel was an internal city employee before, mm-hmm. and I believe that's the reason why it was separated. It was, I don't know, some of you remember Dr. Das, and he was, so I think that's part of the reason, and he had an administrative assistant that was helping him, so they wanted to keep that cost separate.
So before it was, really it was personnel cost.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Was that Dodd when he was working under the city or just contract under us?
It was when he was working for the city, and then it just continued.
The city medical service.
I know you were going to ask this again, John, but it's my sixth year on the board. I've been waiting for a presentation. It's outstanding.
Oh, thank you.
I just want to say that. But on page 10, you know, the one thing we've talked about is that, you know, you come out with these one-off items for approval to the board with this delegate authority. And does this page 10 mean that you now have the authority to spend within within these numbers if we approve your budget?
So I believe the board approves, so just to skip to, so you can see it as a summary, the board approves in these budget categories. And technically, within those categories, we can spend however we need. If I needed to move money from one category to another,
mm-hmm.
I can do it. I think it's, is it 50,000, Benji? Mm-hmm. The budget policy allows me to move 50,000. Anything more than 50,000, I would need board approval. But don't forget, each one of these service providers have a contract that also has been approved by the board. So within each contract, I still have to, the organization is bound by those contracts as well. So, you know, every contract that I've done since I've been here has been not to exceed, as an example. But the limitation for absolute is within these budget categories. That's essentially what you're not just approving the top number, you're also approving the budget categories here.
Great. That's music to my ears.
Okay, good.
Last question. You didn't talk much about variance from actuals.
Sure.
I know you may not have the numbers today, but that will be interesting to see.
So if you look at the, I don't have it in the form of presentation, but on the agenda are the, I'm going to stop sharing here for a moment.
Sorry. Oh, okay. It's the one of the attachments?
Yes. All the details are on the attachments around the variances. So the variance, we're running under our budgets, which we typically do, because again, we run our budgets in a way that we have to be able to provide our services. I'm just looking for my,
Yeah, it looks like the third attachment. Sorry, okay. I probably didn't get that far.
No worries. No worries. If you have any questions either now or later, please feel free to reach out. Yeah, of course. Okay.
Can I go back? I thought the artificial intelligence slide is important. I'm a big believer in trying to make use of the tools when they make sense. And I tell all these companies I meet, if you're not using any sort of tool for that, you're standing still. So I think it's good that you have this focus. I still had a couple of questions. The city has their own initiatives, and then we have these initiatives. Is one leading the other, or are these independent? Like you mentioned ChatGPT, does the city have a license and they're using it? How does that work with AI?
Sure. So the city has an enterprise license with ChatGPT. When we decide one of our employees needs to use it, use their license, and then administratively we transfer budget to the city. Is that how that works? So you know, they've negotiated a contract for this enterprise license, and then we get a user, and then but administratively we just transfer money from our budget to their budget.
Okay, and then the training and all the initiatives, is that led by the city?
Correct.
And so we don't have our own.
Yeah,
I mean, other than you doing it on your own and everybody doing it, okay.
No, we don't have internal training. We don't have internal communications. So we rely heavily on the city for what's available, as well as again, they have a new learning management platform that has purported to have over 1,000 training programs. But when I looked, I only saw one or two on AI. So hopefully that'll be an area that they invest in a bit.
Okay, great. And then. You probably know this from training, but you have to use caution. And I know with the enterprise version of ChatGPT, they probably have privacy settings turned mm-hmm. on, but you just have to be careful, especially with an ORS and pension. You know, we have all this data that we would use it. You just have to be careful because they use the data to train their models. So if the privacy settings aren't separate, all the stuff that you might do at ORS could be shared with the models.
Yeah, the city has recommended settings, and our enterprise is not used to train any of the models. Yeah, it's only internal, and we don't upload anything with PII.
Okay, yeah,
of course. Nothing that wouldn't be public anyway.
Okay, great. All right, great, thanks. Yeah, and then one last thing, it'd be good over time, maybe not now because it's kind of just starting. You mentioned efficiency, but if the city or ORS has a way of tracking, you know, how is this helping us? Because you don't want to just use it just for using it. At the end of the day, it has to help us make us more efficient.
Sure. Andrew and I were talking a little bit about that before the board meeting. I'm still searching for areas where I get more out than I put in, you know, and I think it is it's an investment curve, you know, I agree. And I don't have a great way to track that right now, but if we don't make these investments today, it'll never come, right? That's a guarantee. So, it's something I'm struggling with to figure out how do we quantify that benefit. We'll definitely challenge to be
better. Right, thank you.
Hey, John, I caught up with the section C. It looks like, from what I see here, and you can address this later if you like.
Sure.
Let me just put the question out there. It sounds like the adopted budget for 25-26 was $8.5 million, and the forecast is $7.5 or $7.6 million.
Sure.
But you're asking for an increase of 3.3% over the $8.5 million or the actual?
No, over the previously budgeted $8.5 million.
So can you explain why you'd want that big of an increase when you are already running under budget?
Sure. Let me just.
And like I said, you can address it later if you want.
No, I don't have that addressed in this particular budget presentation, but let me just bring up that section so that we can all be on the same page. Okay, let me present this. Give me 1 second. Is the page that you're referring?
Page 5 of this.
Yes, okay. This is page 5. So it's a little bit of an eye chart on the screen. But our forecast 25-26 is 7.5 million, and essentially we're asking for 8.7, right? So in some of our forecasting is linear in that if we spent $10,000 a month, we're going to assume that we spent $10,000 in the remaining months. So that's not always the best. That is not always the most accurate. In some cases, we have expenses that come in more of a lump sum in particular months. But the budget that we produce is based on, a build up from the bottom up, not just a year over year increase. If you would like an analysis of the categories to determine where we think if we took rent as an example, we're coming in at forecasting to come in at 213, but yet we're budgeting for 270. As an example, in this past month's invoice, we received a $23,000 credit because we have to pay a monthly fee for some of our share of the common lighting areas, but we don't know if that's going to run over or below. Some years it runs over, some years it runs below. Although this year it ran with a $23,000 credit, you know, next year it may not run with that same credit. Not to mention, I mean, that maybe that's a bad example because we also received, as part of the negotiation, I think we had 1 month of credit in this year's actuals. Just as an example,
That's something helpful, but what I observe here is that from 24-25 actuals to adopted, it was a 17% higher budget, 25-26 than actuals. So it doesn't look like you're, and even if the forecast is, off by some, it's underestimating it.
Mm-hmm.
The cushion in the budget, you should have some cushion for sure, but is sure. Is it high? That's my question.
The budget environment for ORS in San Jose is pretty complex, right? So I think I talked a little bit about this last year, but you know, I'm trying to build a budget that has enough contingency in it such that I don't feel like we would need to come back to a budget augmentation process, because it becomes very complex when I would have to come back to both boards, and then the city's budget process only supports certain types of budget augmentation to only certain times of the year. And so in a lot of ways, I feel like this is a one-time request without significant overhead. If there's an area that you'd like me to do a little bit more analysis on, either before or after, I'm happy to do it. But for right now, this is what we believe is puts us in the best place for 2027.
Yeah. Okay. I mean, I think that answers my question.
There. Yeah, and you know, there are some variable costs. Especially in our professional services, you know, even our actuarial services, even though there's a standard set of processes that we do every year, they also do hourly work for us. Reed Smith has components that are fixed fee, and they have components that are hourly, right? So if we get a lot of member complaints or litigation, you know, we have to rely on them heavily. Some of those we do three-year averages and smoothing to try to estimate where we are. Benji, anything you want to add to that?
Like you said, it's linear. So when we did the forecast for this, this was in after 6 months worth of expenses. Now we're in April, so we have three quarters of expenses. So it's not really it's not the actual. So like for salaries and benefits, that's actually by the end of the year, now that we've had more data, it's actually going to be 74,000 closer. I mean, 74,000 under the budget than what we show here. Right now it's 346 under budget, but at the end of this year, it's actually going to be 74,000 based on what I've seen. So there's information we haven't gotten as of January that is not included in here. And so that's why it's showing. The big thing that discrepancy, I think, is the legal. And I think, you know, for the past few years, the legal has just been going up. And now that we know that it's, you know, more steady, we can reduce it.
I mean, I might suggest that we have a more frequent reporting to the board, perhaps, on where you are intra-year.
Sure. So we do quarterly? We do quarterly reports that usually are in consent agenda. I mean, if you'd like us to present formally to the board, maybe at least at the halfway point. I mean, that's something we could consider if that's what you'd like. I'm happy to do that.
I mean, and like the other trustees, Dwayne, I'm not saying that cushion isn't important, but the person, it's such a, it's what the number is. It's an art. I understand.
No.
I don't know if you can. Is it on?
No.
Okay. No. Well, I speak loud enough. I think I think two items is, you know, Benji said legal is about 600,000. I think the medical is about 300. So that's almost covers the whole thing, right? It'd be interesting to see how this year turns out in the upcoming fiscal year. But it's a good problem to have, you're coming in under budget.
Sure.
But you're right. Yeah, you
should. So a good CFO would say that if you're over budget, that's better, but it's still something to be reviewed as part of budgeting problems.
I mean, I'd be comfortable with the more frequent review. I'm not criticizing the budget. Sure. I think the budget is fine.
The counterpoint, I think, living in the consent calendar is a great place for it, because you can review the consent calendar before the meeting, see a question that you have on the budget, the quarterly report. You can pull it from consent calendar, we can discuss it, and then put it back. That's a counterpoint. Knowing that budgets are inherently fluid, I think, to Benji's point, it's going to be the information you look at today isn't the information
is the information from however long ago the budget was created, right? So it's constantly in motion. I think quarterly reports in the consent calendar are great. Thank you.
And they do a they have a projection as well, right?
There's no projection, but I also wanted to add that the monthly expense reports are also on the consent agenda. So that's, I think we include what percentage of the budget on a monthly status.
We get the projections put into what's put in the consent agenda.
Sure. I'll review with Benji and bring something back.
And can I just add on the legal, I understand, yeah, it's come in low, but I do think that's an area where we probably want to have the cushion. Hopefully we never need to use it, but legal expenses can be very lumpy, and we want to make sure we have the budget to use our lawyers when we need our lawyers.
Absolutely.
Anything else before we go into the peer groups? All right, let me switch. Okay, so as I discussed last year's budget process, I took issue with the use of the market value of assets as the basis for our comparisons. And so just to put together a simple comparison where we have one fund that is hypothetically, these are all hypotheticals, hypothetically funded at 85%, and that same fund, the only difference being that they're funded at 60%, you can see that the 60% fund looks significantly either less efficient or more expensive based on the market value of assets because they actually have less assets, but it doesn't change the underlying work that's being done. It doesn't change the underlying membership that they're supporting. The only thing it changes is the funding ratio. And so the suggestion that I had made last year and that has been implemented this year is that we move away from market value and basis points comparisons and go to actuarial liability, basis points of actuarial liability, so that we eliminate the noise of funding ratio when we do comparisons to other funds. So this is the legacy item for showing the basis points from the market value. So you can see that police and fire is just below the average. Our combined is just above the average because Federated is significantly less funded than police and fire. And so you can see that the Federated number is significantly above the average. But when we move to the actuarial liability as the basis, you can see it kind of brings us very much in line. Like you would expect that the efficiencies would be very similar, whether we're looking at police, fire, federated, or the combined number, and that kind of plays it out here. There is slightly different funding ratios between the two based on our budget proration policy.
Hey, John, can you explain why the 5 to 15 BAL peer average is different on the two slides on that table on the right? So it shows 13.7.
No, I see what you're saying. And you're saying the peer average is 11.
Yeah, why is it different than the two? Isn't it supposed to be the same?
Well, no, it should be the basis point average should be different, right? Because it's the basis points. One is basis points of market value, and one is basis points of actuarial value.
Oh, okay. But 0.44, 8.81, and then some reason the AUM on the average on the first part was 7.79. Anyway, I didn't know why it was different.
Actuarial versus market.
But AUM?
Yeah.
Assets.
So one is AUM,
right?
The other is actuarial liability.
Oh, I'm sorry. Okay.
Right. So the whole idea is that you're taking
I'm not reading charts right.
No, that's how much assets you have versus how much assets you should have.
Okay, got it. Okay. The next slide is focusing on personnel expense, being that it's our largest expense category, just to see how San Jose compares to some of our peer groups. Again, basis points of actuarial liability. Both plans are coming in below average, and the combined plan as well, again, slightly, kind of putting us in the middle of the peer group.
This includes investment staff?
This includes investment staff. So investment staff are part of our administrative expense. Our investment consultants and fees, that's all not a part of the investment expense. I mean, the administrative expense. And then the last slide is members per employee. So kind of trying to get at how is our staff size compared to the employees that we serve. I think this is the toughest slide here. But I also think that it's probably a little, looking at the individual plans is probably not the right way to view this data. Even, I show it for transparency, but when you think about our staff are really serving two plans. There's a bit of complexity in the setup here at ORS. I'm just going to my notes here. First, ORS administers the healthcare benefits for our retirees. Not all of our peer funds actually do healthcare administration. We have a small component of our staff that are dedicated to healthcare administration. While it is fairly consistent throughout the year, there is one time of year where that really peaks out for open enrollment for our healthcare in the fall. And we have extreme surge demand that hits the organization that we need to plan for has an impact on the staff load. The second is, we operate with two independent boards. This also means not just the administrative staff are supporting twice the number of meetings or twice the amount of travel associated with trustees, but we also have two sets of, we have joint governance meetings, or at least we've had since I've been here, but we have two sets of governance documents that we need to manage and review and update. We have 10 distinct benefit structures that the benefits team, that everybody in the benefits team needs to know, understand, and be able to administer. Every time we receive a policy question, I have to check two or more. I have to check double the amount of policies to make sure that I'm covering all the bases. It's not just going to the police and fire. What I'm really saying is that there's a complexity in having the organization of this structure that I think you're seeing in the number of people that it takes to support it. And then, what I've heard in some of the past presentations before I got here was that, the board's also deliberately built out an investment team that the plan could grow into. This is a governance choice that the board's made intentionally. The also supports the governance structure that the board has in place to delegate significant authority to the investment team. So that staff is counted in these numbers in the denominator of the equation, but the number of members and employees calculations don't change because we chose to insource much of that investment capability. So, I encourage you to look at the joint number, and which is the red dot, still at the down towards the bottom, but not the lowest. And it's an area that I think we need to take a look at because with the budget proposal that's on the table today, we're looking to add one more employee, right? And then when I take a look, we've been working through some of the strategic planning initiatives, and we take a look there. I think there is possibilities or likelihood that there will be some, not this year, but next year budget requests, some additional staff requests in order to meet some new strategic initiatives.
John, can I ask a question?
Please.
just a question on the member per employee, the full-time equivalents. How are we calculating that for police and fire versus federated? I'm just trying to figure out how federated has that full-time equivalents with more members.
Sure. So about 9 years ago, there was a decision made to prorate investment personnel for budgeting purposes based on AUM. So it's essentially, I think it's a 60-40 split, which is still very much in alignment with how the AUM is today, you know, maybe within a fraction of a point. And so that's why you see the difference there. The police and fire actually cost, because they have a large set of investments, a little bit more of the personnel burden. So in our budget, we have what I would say is three categories of expenses. We have expenses, investment personnel, that's split 60-40. Then we have some expenses that are explicitly charged to one of the plans. So as an example, if Reed Smith is working on a police and fire issue, they bill police and fire directly, and that gets accounted for directly from the police and fire budget. But then the majority of expenses, like say the rent, is split just 50-50. So it's unattributable. So therefore, we just split it 50-50.
What about things like, you know, benefits analysts, where police, we're federated, has a lot more members. Would those be split based on members, or are those split 50-50?
Today, they're split 50-50.
Thank you.
Yeah. I was saving this point for the end, but, I think what I would like to do, not at this meeting, but for a future discussion, is maybe establishing an ad hoc committee to go through, to do a more of a budget deep dive, not so much in, I mean, happy to go through the details as we talked about, to go kind of the next level, but really more focusing on the budget, the proration between the two funds. Are we doing the right thing? How do we compare against our peers specifically in that? Because again, Fresno City, who also has a two board structure, they split their cost 50-50 down the line. But that creates this extremely out of balance if you look at them separately. So their police and fire plan looks so much more expensive than their federated plan for the same reason that you're pointing out. The federated plan has more members, so therefore per member it looks cheaper. And the police and fire plan looks far more expensive because they have less members. So, you know, what the analysis that I've done looking across the country, I haven't been able to find apples to apples, but police and fire plans tend to be more expensive than, you know, so New York City has three pension funds that would make up us. They have a police fund, they have a fire fund, and they have an employee fund. When I look at police and fire together and I look at the employee fund together by itself, the police and fire funds are significantly more expensive by more than a factor of one, actually. So, and that has a lot to do with the fact that the plans are more complex, the work arrangements that the unions have with the city are more complex. There's more disabilities typically for police and fire members. And so, you know, it's just a little bit more cost to administer. But anyway, looking maybe in the next month or two to bring a recommendation to take a look at that, do a little bit more of a deep dive, because anything that we would need to or want to have in place for next year, it's like December timeframe. Is that too late, Benji? Benji's like, how about now? you know, because we started talking about it as, you know, kind of going through the budget cycle for the second time for me, started to peel back some of those onions, but it wasn't really until like February where I started asking some of these questions, and Benji saying, it's hard to do it now. She didn't tell me no, but she was telling me no.
So if I could.
Sure.
So on this page, the denominator is the number of employees, right?
Yes.
So for police and fire, you're taking the total number of employees and taking half of that? Because the number of employees at ORS, right?
So the number of employees dedicated, you know, budgetarily dedicated to police and fire is 23.6.
Okay. So you're apportioning the
increase.
Okay.
And that's why I'm saying, you know, I think the more legitimate comparison is the combined. Because again, I don't, to Trustee Flicker's point, I'm not sure it would be really accurate to say that half of our benefits people are focusing on police and fire. I would be willing to bet that there's a higher percentage that are focusing on Federated just by sheer numbers of members and retirees.
I mean, there is a silver lining in this, right? If you look at this, your x-axis is the actual liability. So you're adjusting for plan size. All three of plans in our size are about the same.
And so,
it depends on how you're defining the peer. I mean, sure, there may be an aspiration to get closer to 41. But,
I think we need to look at those because so that we don't operate in a vacuum, right? When Barbara and I started talking about some of these strategic initiatives and we start talking about, well, this is really going to require a communications person. If we want to accomplish X, we really need this. And that this, in some cases, is we need someone new to focus on this area, and communications as an example. Well, that's now going from 40, you know, this is a 45 person organization comparison. Next year, hopefully, be 46. And now we're talking about 47, right? That's just going to drive this number in a different direction. And so, you know, it's just something we want to do in context, right? We want to make sure we're making good decisions with the best information we have. And that might mean that we need to drive, we'll be driving away from that average. But there may be another area that we can take a look at that we can maybe increase. It's one of the reasons why I put the AI slide on here, right? I don't know where that's going to bring us, but I'm hoping that that will help.
So John, I mean, like I think we listened to you that mentioned it. Love the presentation, new format, information that you put forward, the new metrics right here.
Thank you.
I agree, you know, with you that, you know, with these new metrics that you're presenting to create an ad hoc committee when that is appropriate, and maybe August, you know, before actuarial season picks up and might give plenty of time for Benji, you know, at that point. So I concur with all of that. This is an item that it needs to be, needs to take action on.
Correct.
For approval. We got a motion by Santos.
Second
by
Kenny. Ask some question.
Okay. Yeah, we'll get to further discussion.
Oh,
yeah.
Is there a question?
Yeah, so we got a second by Gretchen. Any further discussion, David?
We were talking about the budget stuff, right?
Yeah.
What are the chances of city approving this budget as is presented?
I think it's a great question. I had conversations with the city's budget director. I had conversations with the head of the mayor's budget department. They seem cautiously supportive of our two personnel changes. That's where they have typically focused the most. A 3.3% budget increase, I mean, you know, it's slightly above inflation or projected inflation. So, I mean, it's a pretty responsible budget from both an initiative standpoint as well as a current operations standpoint. Our running 5-year average was 8.8, so significantly under where we've been in the past. I feel that there is good probability that this will be supported by the city. But who knows? Budget discussions at the city level are hard right now. But I do believe that this is, you know, we're not really other than the two personnel changes, we're really not asking for much new.
Any other further questions or discussion for Howard?
Yeah. Why did we have actuarial liability as the basis in the past? Does anybody know? Because we had market value.
Yeah.
So was there a history to that and you decided?
I think actuarial liability, I'm not sure using assets as a basis for cost comparison overall is the best or the cleanest metric. But if you're going to use assets,
using actuarial liability is better than market valuation of assets because it takes out one other level of noise.
Yeah. No, I understand that. My question was, historically, why did we use, I mean, does anybody know? Okay. And then what do our peers do? Do they compare against actual liability or do they use market value?
I mean, that's a good question. I actually haven't seen any comparisons like this. I looked at five different budget presentations, but I haven't seen a peer comparison like this. Some of them do, which is what I would love to get to, like a CEM benchmarking where they do a far more detailed breakdown of your costs to try to peel back the layer so that you can actually better compare apples to apples, but it that takes personnel and time as well, and we just haven't been able to get there.
Okay. All right. Thanks.
All right. There is no other discussion. We have a motion by Santos, second by Gretchen. All in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed? All right. Thank you, John and Benji.
Great. Thank you.
All right, we'll go to 4D, discussion action on joint personnel committee assignments. So when we did assignments back in, I believe it was January, there was the JPC did not touch. The conversation around that was we were in the middle of the CIO search and we didn't want in the middle of interviews that we didn't want to change the personnel on there. With that CEO search, we were revisiting it. Per our policy, the IC chair, which is now Howard Lee, belongs on the JPC. So I'm making a recommendation that Howard joins the JPC and Frankie will be stepping down. We'll take the recommendation. Motion by Santos. Second by Woosley. Any further discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Brings us to 4D discussion action on adoption of data city policy. John?
Sure. Let me. So the management performance program policy, really more of a modernization update. I think. They made some fixes to the number of the maximum executive days, not a change to the current process, but just an update to the policy to the current practice. They also added some language to support the use of SimplyGov in the process. They also updated some wording just to say that the process would be done each year rather than the fall of each year. So very minor changes. I recommend approval.
Any questions, discussion?
Motion to approve.
Motion by Santos.
Second.
Second by Menon. Any questions? Questions? Not all, all in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Thank you. Brings us to retirements. Eric P. Snyder, firefighter, fire department, effective March 28, 2026, with 2022 8 years of service. We'll go down to deferred vested, Brian Schaab, assistant chief of police department, effective March 11, 2026, with 26.77 years of service. We got to take a motion for both of these separately. So a motion for Santos.
I'll second.
Second by Franco. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? We're vested. I'll go ahead and make the motion.
Second.
Second by Votto. All in favor?
Aye.
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 Any opposed? Thank you. Anybody want to make any comments? I'll make a comment on Eric Snyder. Great individual. He's did a lot for our department and our community, and I appreciate his service and enjoy retirement. All right, that brings us to death and survivorship notifications. Notification of the death of Samuel G. Garcia, fire engineer, retired July 12th. 2008, died January 26, 2026. Survivorship benefits to Lilia Garcia, spouse. Notification of the death of Anthony Ganain, fire captain, retired July 24, 2010, died January 26, 2026. Survivorship benefits to Elizabeth Ganain, spouse. Notification of the death of Stanley B. Tice, police sergeant, retired February 4th, 1990. Died February 7th, 2026. No survivorship benefits. At this moment, I'll take a moment of silence. Thank you. Anybody want to share any comments?
Yes. Well, everybody has, I didn't touch this thing, so I don't know what goes off. Everybody is really important here, but Engineer Garcia. And when it comes to Tony Ganain, I was fortunate enough to stay friends, and we would meet together, firefighters, and have lunch once in a while, and we got to see him right before he passed. The reason I bring this up is that one of the most courageous people I've ever met, he was crippled the last 16 years of his life, and he was just a courageous, strong human being, and so loved, and everybody around him. So thank you for the time, and the family is just special.
Yeah, in regards to Sergeant Tice, I never worked with him. He's definitely before my time, but appreciate all the time and service and sacrifice that the family's made for us, and wish the family's best in the future.
Right. We'll go ahead and move on to a committee report out, assessment committee.
Our next meeting is on April 28th, so that's the only update.
At risk.
Our next meeting is May 21st, 2026.
Thank you. Governance? Liquor?
We had a busy schedule. First, I'd like to say thank you to the committee's previous chair, Trustee Santos. Thank you to Franco for accepting the nomination as the vice chair. We've got a few action items I'm going to let John talk on, but to set us off or start us off on this, a lot of what we discussed this time around was streamlining and standardizing the process for reviewing policies going forward, to put us in a better spot. And everyone on the board should be prepared for, after our quarterly meetings, we'll probably be bringing about 3 policies to be updated per quarter. So just be expecting that going forward. We have minutes to accept, and then John, do you want to kick us off on
sure.
our items?
Do the minutes first, and then.
Okay. Yeah, we'll go ahead and receive and file the minutes for January 15, 2026.
Great. So for the 73C, during the governance committee meeting, Amanda presented a governance review framework, which included a multi-year work plan. And so the idea is part of our review process is the current policies say that we're going to review them every 5 years. Aon is bringing best practice, saying that it should be every 3 years. And so if you review the memo and the previous presentation, you'll see that we have a layout of accomplishing this review in about a 3-year timeline. And as Trustee Flicker had mentioned, this means that at every governance meeting, we're going to be discussing the next 3 that we're going to review, and we'll be presenting red lines for 3 to be approved. 3, you know, 2, sometimes it's 4, but, you know, around 3 per quarter, in order for us to complete that process. So Today, we're looking for your approval on the governance review framework and the multi-year work plan to review all of our governance documents. But happy to answer any questions.
Motion to approve.
Motion by Santos.
Second.
Second by Sunita. Any further discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Thank you. So go to discussion and action to adopt the new city, new policies.
Policy,
thank you.
Yes, that does say policy on policy.
It's not SNL's gift.
No, so this is just, again, trying to document what we actually do, putting some definitions around the different types of governance documents that we have, whether it's policy, a charter, or it's a staff procedure, who is responsible, how those get approved, and also as part of this, putting together a policy template so that we can formalize all of our policies into the same look and feel and components. And so today we're looking for approval on this new policy on policies.
Motion by Santos.
Second.
Second by Gretchen.
No,
Sunita. All good. Any discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Go to E, discussion action on new public comment policy.
Okay, so this is also a new policy that we worked with the governance committee at the last meeting. This policy is meant to document our current practice of public comment policy and just to formalize it in a written document as recommended by best practice. I will need to recommend one change to the policy as it was posted. So we received a question through the city's review process, and then after discussion with Reed Smith, we're recommending that we remove the public speaker time limits of 30 minutes. So the current policy as written allows for only a 30 minute public comment per item, and then allowed the board chair to increase that by 10 minutes. Now, technically compliant with the Brown Act, we do not recommend that we would want to limit the public in any way in their comments, in their ability to comments. And so being that we wouldn't recommend that either in the policy, now in the policy or at any time, it's we want to remove that friction of the policy and just remove that language. So what that technically would mean is removing B1 and C1 entirely, which describes the 30-minute limit. And then just removing a sentence within the total 30-minute limit from B3 and C3.
And that's the chair's discretion.
So essentially the chair would not have discretion to limit public comment. So by time.
We would still have a limit of 1 minute, 2 minute
Correct. Per Correct.
Per person, but if there was multiple people here that takes you over. Yes. That's what he was referring to.
I understand.
Okay.
Motion to approve.
With those changes?
Yes.
Okay. Motion by Santos?
Second.
Second by Flicker. Thank
I have
you.
A question.
Yeah, Howard.
Is this the city or is this our own policy?
This is our own policy, but it's in general alignment with the city policy. And also we look to some other retirement boards around the state to see what they were doing. So good.
Yeah, that was going to be my question. Do you look at other boards? Because I know familiar with the school district boards, they do have a time limit.
Yeah.
So
and ACERA, as an example, they're another county fund. They also have a time limit. But in the conversations with Maytac, you know, during a board meeting, it would be hard to recommend that we don't extend the time if there are people willing to make appropriate. When I say appropriate, comments within the bounds of the comment period. So if by recommendation we should always do it, why create the cumbersome process during the board meeting? That was the thought.
Any other questions? No, we already got our motion. Oh.
One more.
Yeah.
Do we have, if for some reason 200 people show up, we can obviously reduce their amount to 1 minute per these guidelines. Do we have any recourse to ensuring the board meeting doesn't go on for hours and hours?
No.
Okay.
Nope. As Councilmember Casey can attest, some of those meetings go very long, especially during budget season. I think at the mayor's March message, they had over 200 commenters that lined up for public participation.
No, the chair, I mean, current.
You're off.
Currently, we have this at the beginning of the agenda. The chair has flexibility to move that to the end of the agenda.
By orders of the day.
By orders of the day.
Yeah. Okay.
So if we do have a large contingency that want to speak, we can move things around.
That's for the general public comments.
Yes.
Yeah. Correct.
Very good. Thank you.
Sure.
Any other questions?
I will also point out just for the committee that there was one other change made or addition made. We added language around signs and symbolic materials to define prohibited obscenities. I think that was the only ask from it.
The maker of the motion accepts that. Like we just had that, right?
Yeah. So we have our motions. All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Here. All right, brings us to discussion action to recommend leading authority to the CEO to approve city policies applicable to operational of.
Motion to approve.
Motion by Bonaparte, second by Santos. Any discussion questions? If not, all in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Brings us to disability, Santos.
Yes, Mr. Chair, we just had a committee meeting, and the next one is going to be at May 11th, and you see the minutes here and so on. I just want to say, I think that with the panel we have, and Bethany Lizzie and our staff, I think we're saving money, doing a great job. I've been here many, many years to compare, and I think that what we got going is really smooth and efficient. You know, we really appreciate all the work. Thank you.
Stephen filed the minutes for March 2nd, 2026. Brings us to JPC.
Yeah. So we did have a meeting on April 1st. We rotate between chair and vice chair between police and fire and federated, so that happened. We discussed the Gallagher report on investment compensation, and the decision there was that we're going to decide what's next steps. Do you want to add anything?
I think we reviewed the findings, and the findings were that there were some areas within our investment program that definitely deserves further recommendation. But we're looking at the current budgetary climate, the current personnel climate at the city, we think there might be some advantage for us just to wait a little bit longer to see how the union negotiations play out before we bring this to the city for consideration, as well as some of the groundwork that we want to make sure that we lay so that if there are oppositions, we can know them in advance and you know, potentially work through some of those.
Yeah, thank you.
Of course.
I guess before I hang on, maybe we can receive and file the minutes and then go and pay on.
Okay. We'll go ahead and receive and file the minutes for January 7th, 2026, which brings us to the discussion action on the CEO performance evaluation metrics and weightings.
Okay. I think we have Julie Becker. Are you online?
Yes. And let me share my memo.
So I'll just remind the board that this is an annual process that the JPC goes through to determine the metrics and weightings for the CEO and CIO performance evaluations. This discussion was led at the last JPC by Aon. So Julie, go ahead and you can take it over.
Okay, thank you. So the memorandum that's in your materials summarizes the procedures and framework to evaluate the CEO's performance. It's covering the period July 1st, 2025 through June 30th, 2026. the JPC met and approved the framework. And as you can see, there are organizational outcomes that are a total weight of 60%, and they cover benefit administration, cost effectiveness, member service, surveys, timeliness, et cetera. The percentages total 60%. We did make a change from last year and deleted the 10% weighting for investment performance, as we've had conversations that's really not appropriate for the CEO. Also, the management methods, these total 40% total weight, and it covers enterprise risk management, human resources, operations, and leadership management. We have the ratings and the definitions that match the city's management performance program. I recall last year, you know, we had to look into different documents to pull out these definitions. So we will ensure that these are part of the evaluation process. And as far as the baseline award parameters as set forth in the table, we have the percentage award and additional executive leave days. These match the cities. So as part of the evaluation process for this cycle, we will submit a background report to the board, and it will contain the CEO's self-assessment, the metrics that we gather, results of the board and city council liaisons rating comments on the CEO management leadership survey and staff climate survey results. And just a quick note on those staff climate survey results, we had discussion in the past with the boards and also at the JPC. We decided to split out investments from non-investment staff. So just to get a sense baseline for those different groups going forward. The boards will then review the background report in your closed sessions and talk about preliminary performance conclusions, and the designees will consolidate input, meet with the CEO, and have a final evaluation and performance award recommendation for the board's consideration. I am happy to answer any questions.
Any questions for Julie or
on the JPC on this policy?
Motion to approve.
All right, motion by Santos.
Second.
Second by Flicker. Any further questions, discussions? If not, all in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Okay, we'll go ahead and go to the CIO. Julie?
Thank you. So this is will be a shorter evaluation procedure, because you have your brand new appointed CIO and the retiring CIO. So we do not recommend that you review the retiring CIO. And in discussions with the JPC, we came up with sort of a snapshot review, more of a check-in rather than a formal performance evaluation process. The reason that we recommend still doing this review is to provide the new CIO with the opportunity for potential performance-based executive days awards in 2027. And, you know, normally when we're in a regular cycle for the CIO, we have weightings of 60% for investment performance and 40% for management methods. But given he just started and, you know, the review will expire June 30th of this year, the JPC agreed that let's just look at 100% on management methods. So the management methods are enterprise risk, human resources, stakeholder relations, operations management, and leadership and management effectiveness. So the process will be the CIO will provide a short self-report memo rather than a full-blown self-assessment, pretty much to highlight the status of his new onboarding initiatives to the boards. And the boards will review in closed session and have their preliminary performance conclusions. And as with the process used for the CEO. The designees will consolidate input, meet with the CIO, and present final evaluation and performance-based executive days awards recommendations for the board's consideration. So I'm happy to answer any questions on that one.
Any questions?
Motion to approve.
Now we've got a motion by Santos.
Second.
Second by Howard. Any further questions? If not, all in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Great. Thank you, Julie.
Thank you, Julie.
All right, so that brings us to the end of our agenda. Is there any proposed agenda items for next meeting? If not, we are adjourned. Thank you, everybody.